So we will begin with roll call, please.
Chair McAdoo?
Here.
Vice Chair Carvalho?
Here.
Regent McMichael?
Here.
Regent Moran? Regent Perkins?
Here.
You have a quorum present. Advisory members? Mr. Robison? Mr. Tierney?
Here.
Ms. North?
President, I would just like to make note, I may have to get off the call early. I have two branches that are surrounded by fire, and we do have some emergency staffing issues, so I apologize if I have to get off early. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Hooper?
Here, thank you.
Thank you.
So is there any public comment? And I believe that Chief of Staff Bogali will be taking care of that for us today, since they were sent either by email, text, or phone call.
Yes, Madam Chair. Zalalem Bogali here, the Deputy General Counsel for System Administration at NCHI. Madam Chair, we have one public comment, which I'll read. It is from Jay Caffaretta, or Caffarata, excuse me. First name J-A-Y, last name C-A-F-F-E-R-A-T-A. Dean Gould must be addressed in a public meeting, and the language he used must be called out. If NCHI is working so hard to make our school more welcoming and inclusive, this man must be removed from his position. Prove that you are committed to the process of changing the systemic sexism that this man represents. I am appalled that this man is paid with taxpayer dollars in addition to the tuition I pay to support this very public face of sexism that NCHI proclaims it is trying to change. If you are changing the systemic problem, start with this one who clearly influences the culture of the Board of Regents. To quote Mr. Gould, quote, man speak, close quote, is not acceptable in any way, as is, quote, child speak, close quote. I request the leadership of the Board of Regents to remove Mr. Gould immediately for cause. That concludes the public comment. Madam Chair, thank you.
Thank you. And we will have opportunity for public comment at the end of the meeting as well. So we will move to agenda item number two, and that would be request for a motion for the minutes.
So moved.
I'll second.
And was that Regent Carvalho that seconded? Thank you so much. Because it's Zoom, I just want to make sure that we assist Winter in getting what she needs to have for the meeting. So thank you. And we will move to the chair's report. That's item number three. So the very first thing I have to tell you is I miss seeing all of you in person. And I cannot wait until we're able to get back to that. I'm also very aware, however, that everyone is working diligently to take care of our students, our staff, our faculty, to get the school year started off in the best way possible. And I think there are numerous challenges that each of you as institution people have overcome. So I want to thank you for working so hard on that and doing your best to keep all of us informed about what's going on. I really don't have any updates. This is my first meeting as the chair of the Community College Committee, but I have made connections with all four Community College presidents over these last couple of months, and I feel like each of you are doing the best job possible. So thank you. Thank you for that. And we will move then to the Vice Chancellor's report and item number four, please.
Madam Chair, first, if I may interject.
What did I say? What I didn't do?
on the motion for the minutes, we didn't conclude.
We didn't. Completely. Oh, well, all right. I love minutes. So we have a motion and a second for the minutes. I think we typically have been taking roll call vote on the Zoom meeting so that we know exactly. So, Regent Carvalho, we'll do, I'll call aye. On you to be. Regent Perkins?
Aye.
Regent McMichael?
Aye.
I did not hear Regent Moran say that he's present. Is he present? Okay. And I vote aye as well on the minutes. So the minutes passed. Thank you for that, Mr. Bobelli. Appreciate your help. All right. So now we will move to agenda item number 4, which is the Vice Chancellor's report, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you okay. You're looking okay. Quite dapper.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, everyone. Nate McKinnon for the record. Happy Friday. Happy August. Happy back to school. I hope everyone's doing well. I'm delighted to be here virtually with you to provide an update from my position in the system office. Since our last meeting, while the world has changed, we met in January. We had a lot of great topics at that time. We had to cancel our April meeting, unfortunately, due to the pandemic, but it's delightful to be back with everyone on the committee today. When the pandemic began back in March, we received a call from the governor's office requesting the temporary loan, if you will, of Mr. Caleb Cage, who at the time was Assistant Vice Chancellor for Workforce Development. That was due to his previous tremendous experience in emergency management for the state. That what was supposed to be maybe 60-day appointment, as you all know, turned into a much longer permanent job as the state's COVID-19 director, causing Caleb to need to give his notice for his previous position. And it looks like he's going to have his hands full for quite some time. That was certainly our loss at NSHE. And the state's gain, but there's nobody who I think we'd rather have in that role helping Governor Sisolak as he navigates this tremendously difficult time in pandemic than Mr. Cage. And I just want to take a moment to publicly thank him for his service as Assistant Vice Chancellor for Workforce Development. He did a lot in the short time he was in that role, and we are very appreciative to him and wish him the best of luck as Nevadans and the work he's doing on all of our behalfs in assisting with the response to the pandemic. That left a vacancy in our office, and we were able to do a search and hire Mr. Craig Von Collenberg. Craig comes to us with a tremendous amount of experience in the workforce development arena. He spent over 8 years at the College of Southern Nevada doing workforce development, but more recently, for the past year and a half, was working in the Sisolak administration as the executive director of the Governor's Office for Workforce Innovation, or OWIN, O-W-I-N-N. And Craig is here with us now at the system office, and I'd just like to give him a warm welcome, if we could, a awkward virtual round of applause, and please welcome Craig Von Collenberg to NSHE. In addition, we also had a different hire on our team as well that I wanted to just point out, which is the director of Gear Up that began in March, and that is Ms. Janet Stake. Janet is no stranger to NSHE. She comes to us from the academic affairs team, where she did a lot of work in transfer and articulation, and she began her role as the director of the Gear Up program, which is grant-funded, in March, and that was filling a vacancy left from the previous director, who departed in December for an opportunity in New York. So I do want to point out a couple of in particular things, Madam Chair, that, from a COVID perspective, just the incredible work our institutions have done. Our four community college presidents and their leadership teams, their staff, their faculty, and their students have really stepped up to the plate in dealing with these and navigating these very challenging times. There have been some things that I think that are important for the committee to know that are unique challenges for community colleges that don't necessarily exist elsewhere. And I think the most important one I want to highlight today in dealing with the pandemic is that we have a lot of classes that quite simply cannot be taught remotely. These are lab courses, mostly in our career and technical education areas, or CTE. That would include everything from welding and HVAC to advanced manufacturing and to, you know, even dealing with some of our health sciences and the simulation labs that are required for those licensures in nursing and allied health and CNA programs, respiratory therapists, et cetera. So I want to give kudos to our institutions as they've tried to effectively navigate that. We were fortunate that the governor gave us the opportunity to resume in-person CTE lab instructions with very specific restrictions, including masks, social distancing, limitation on the number of students, back in June. And so we were able to resume for a lot of students who at the time, when COVID began, didn't all of a sudden go to a remote environment because they quite simply couldn't for the courses that they were in. We're delighted to see that opportunity resumed, and we'll continue to do so this fall for those students that are so essential to our workforce. Speaking of workforce, I want to just give a quick update on workforce development. As you know, in January, we actually talked about having this as a regular agenda item. We didn't have anyone focusing specifically on workforce until just 2 weeks ago when Mr. Von Kahlenberg began. So we will resume in our October Community College Committee meeting with the permission of the chair to put workforce development back on the agenda as a regular update, and I look forward to the information that Mr. Von Kahlenberg will bring at that point. We've been working diligently throughout the pandemic with DETR, the Department of Employment, Training, and Rehabilitation, with the Governor's Office of Economic Development, or GOED, and the Governor's Office for Workforce Innovation, or OWIN. Those three partners, along with NCHI and the Nevada Department of Education, have been working collaboratively on how to respond to the incredibly high unemployment rate that Nevada has faced. At the peak of the pandemic, our unemployment rate in the month of April topped out a little over 30%. No state in the nation has ever had an unemployment rate that high. It's no wonder, given our specific economy. However, that makes the task of helping all of those individuals incredibly daunting for all of the agencies that have never experienced anything like this before. Right now, what we're doing is we're working collaboratively on a couple of different fronts. First of all, with the leadership of President Zaragoza and Mr. Frank Woodbeck at CSN, Nevada was accepted into the Reskilling and Recovery Network, which was put together by the National Governors Association, NGA, in partnership with the Association for Community Colleges, AACC. Nevada's team is comprised of community college representatives, as well as representatives from the governor's office and from local workforce boards and economic development agencies. We meet biweekly with participants from 19 other states across the nation to learn from one another about strategies that are being implemented, innovations that are being experimented with as we try and navigate the pandemic. So that network has been incredibly helpful, and we've already started to learn from some other states and states that have also learned from us in terms of how we can work together to tackle the tremendous task of reskilling and recovering from the pandemic. There are also two major grants that are underway right now in terms of their application stage. The first is the Reimagining Workforce Grant. That grant will be applied for by the State Workforce Development Board, as is required in the grant, and it's offered by the U.S. Department of Education. So the Governor's Office of Workforce Innovation is leading that effort, and she is a partner at the table. Myself, along with Mr. Von Kahlenberg, are at the table helping to shape that as we look to secure a grant that will really be cross-agency purposes, and I expect to see a significant amount of that money go to community colleges if we are successful in getting the grant from the federal government. We're very excited about that. That grant application will be finalized in the next couple of weeks. Another grant we're working on is the Strengthening Community Colleges grant. That grant's being run, the application for it's being run directly by my office and with representatives from each of the four community colleges helping design our grant application. That grant will be up to $5 million if we are successfully awarded as a consortium of four community colleges over, I think, 4 years. Both of those grants fundings would begin in January if we are successful in receiving them and dramatically help with our processes for reskilling and recovering and rethinking how we do workforce development as a state. The last thing I want to mention is we're working with the Governor's Office of Economic Development and the Governor's Office directly on procuring or securing rather CARES funds that could be used for workforce development in response directly to the pandemic. So this includes things like ramping up a nursing program or a CNA program to help increase the number of qualified individuals to teach in those programs. Or that will come out of the programs as well. So we're currently working with the Governor's Office of Economic Development on grants that micro grants that might be available to our institutions to help with short-term one-time expenses that will expand capacity in our response to the pandemic. Madam Chair, that concludes my update today. Happy to answer any questions if there are any, and appreciate the time.
Thank you, Vice Chancellor McKinnon. Are there any questions for the Vice Chancellor? Yes, Regent Perkins.
Sorry, Madam Chair, I'm too slow on the texting. I just had, maybe I should bring this up in new business, but I thought, can we get a report from that consortium that Nate mentioned, that Vice Chancellor McKinnon mentioned, that we became a part of as the governors, under the governor, the governor's leadership board or whatever that was?
May I answer that, Madam Chair?
Yes, please.
Thank you, Regent Perkins. Nate McKinnon for the record. Are you asking about the National Governors Association Reskilling and Recovery Network?
Yeah, that one.
Okay. Yeah, I mentioned that briefly, but and I'm happy to provide more information down the road. But we were selected as one of, I think, 20 states in total. That they end up admitting to be a part of the Reskilling and Recovery Network with the National Governors Association. And we have a team that meets biweekly. We have facilitators that are working with us. We've only had two biweekly meetings so far. It just kicked off at the very end of July, but we have another one coming up just next week. And we're actually going to begin meetings in the interim weeks with just our state team to sort of digest what we're learning in the broader network. We've already learned some great things from that. Let me give you an example. North Carolina shared at the last biweekly meeting their inventory of all of the efforts underway to help with the pandemic and the dramatic unemployment that's resulted from that in their state. And they broke it down from a local level to a county level to a statewide level. Because there's so many great initiatives happening that they felt they were having some initiative fatigue and shared with us a version of an initiative inventory, if you will. And we really like that and actually want to look at doing something along those lines for Nevada with our partner agencies that are part of that reskilling and recovery network through NGA. So it's going well. I think we're still very much in the early parts of it. I think this will last for at least 6 months in terms of our participation as a state. Did that answer your question?
Actually, that was very thorough. Thank you. Can we get, like, I guess, updates periodically about how it's going? Yes. And, you know, I guess that's under new business, though.
I would like to add that under new business, we will discuss whether it will be in the Vice Chancellor's report or if it will be a specific agenda item, but we will definitely I get a report on that. Thank you for asking.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, so agenda item number 5 is the Nevada Promise Scholarship, and Vice Chancellor McKinnon will give us an update on that as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Nate McKinnon for the record again. Just quickly on Nevada Promise, I wanted to make sure the committee is aware of a couple things. First of all, when the pandemic began back in March and April, we immediately started receiving phone calls, as did our institutions, regarding the deadlines that are outlined in the Nevada Promise Scholarship. Now, if you remember, the board and this committee last September narrowed down those deadlines to be just one major deadline in the spring, as opposed to two or three as it was before. That one major deadline was June 1st, and being able to make sure that by June 1st, students would have completed their 8 hours of community service required for fall eligibility, as well as having met with a mentor at least once, as well as having returned all necessary paperwork to their financial aid office. That would be the result of something like being selected for verification by the federal government. So we were monitoring the situation and seeing how things were going. As we got into May, it became clear that the ability for students to effectively complete their community service would be limited. So we were able to extend that deadline in the regulations and procedures and guidelines to July 1st and give an extra 30 days for students to be able to complete their community service, their 8 hours, and also be able to meet with their mentor. We also clarified that mentor meetings could certainly be done over the phone or video as appropriate and did not have to be done in person. And in fact, we encouraged them not to be done in person. So our institutions communicated that out to all their mentors and their students, and we were able to make that change to help them in earlier this year. And the other thing that happened with Nevada Promise was that in the special session in July, the budget for Nevada Promise was cut by $1 million. And we are currently in the process of CFO Klinger, my colleague, is working with the governor's finance office to ensure that the backfilling of those with CARES reimbursements as allowed will be fulfilled, as was indicated by the governor's finance office during testimony at the legislature in the special session. So that's currently underway right now. I do want to report to you that our current numbers as of July 15th for fall enrollment in terms of number of Nevada Promise students who've maintained eligibility, meaning they've completed all of their requirements, is 1,467 students statewide. That's somewhat lower than previous years. We'll see who ends up matriculating into that. There's still also the opportunity for students to appeal any adverse decision from the scholarship if they feel they need to do so. Doesn't surprise me that it's lower given the pandemic and the impact that's had on some of the ability to complete the eligibility requirements to begin with. So that completes my report on Nevada Promise, and happy to answer any questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Vice Chancellor McKinnon. I am apologizing. I'm trying to watch my laptop screen. I'm trying to keep track of the agenda, and I'm trying to keep track of text messages for people who want to speak. And I missed a comment that Regent Levine has a question. I apologize for that. If you want to ask the question now, and I really don't know if it's about the Vice Chancellor's report on Promise or his report before, but I'm willing to go back to that question, please, Regent Levine.
Oh, thank you, Chair McAdoo. I was going to just ask it in new business. Vice Chancellor McKinnon, we had mentioned on a phone call, what's the displaced workers quiz that you had mentioned? Was it, it's not 3Me. What was the name of it?
Yes. Madam Chair, yes. Maybe we should ask counsel. I don't want to, I'm happy to include this as part of my report. Is it okay to go back to that item? Maybe if Counsel Begala has, I just don't want us to run afoul of anything.
Yes, exactly.
The chair can go back to an item.
So Vice Chancellor McKinnon, I believe that means that you can report on that from your chair's report, but I will just remind all of us, including myself, that we have a lot of things to get through. So if we need to address that in more discussion, we could add it to the next agenda. But thank you for the question, Regent Levine.
Would you like me to answer it, Madam Chair? Yes.
Yes, sir. Right now, please. Thank you.
Thank you. Nate McKinnon for the record. Regent Levine, thank you for bringing that up. The platform is called Me3. We gave a presentation on this platform to the Board of Regents at the full meeting on March 5th and 6th with our partners from EdPlus at Arizona State University. I'm pleased to announce that we anticipate that that will be fully rolled out in the first, probably the second or third week of September at this point. It's been a little delayed because of COVID and trying to get all the pieces together. I did a demo of it last week myself in beta form to work it through with EdPlus, and I'm very pleased with how it's come together. And just a reminder for for everyone who may not know what Me3 is, it is a career exploration tool that uses the Hollands Code to develop a RIASEC score, which is the U.S. Department of Labor's methodology for compartmentalizing careers based on interests that an individual may have. This particular one, and many of you may have taken a Hollands Code RIASEC score assessment at some point, most likely in 9th or 10th grade, and with a fill-in-the-bubble test that you don't remember and don't know why you took it and you had to do it because the teacher told you you did. The idea behind Me3 is to take that antiquated version and to put it into a game that uses picture matching and picture choices and be able to narrow down your RIASEC score based on the choices you make in the pictures. And it will have a picture of a lab scientist or a picture of a person in a microphone or a picture of a courtroom, et cetera, to help narrow down your exact RIASEC score using national norming data. And so we are very pleased. ASU has been using this for a few years and has had hundreds of thousands of individual users successfully complete the Me3 app. We're very excited to have a Nevada-specific version that will then track to a career and what degree programs are available for you within the Nevada system of higher education to be able to enter that career pathway. So I really appreciate you bringing that up, Regent. Sorry I didn't mention as part of my report, but we look forward to being able to launch that in September and having everybody be able to use it. And I encourage all of you, once it's released, please use it yourselves and encourage others to do the same. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Are there any other questions before we move on to agenda item 6? I believe it is. Yes. All right. Thank you. So agenda item 6, I'm actually hoping that everyone has the Community College Committee charge before them on screen or paper, however you prefer that. When I was asked to chair this committee, I decided, of course, to read the charge and make sure that we were taking care of business on that charge. And my understanding is that the charge was created in 2015, and I do not believe it has had revisions since then. So I thought it would just be a good idea for us to begin the year out looking at that charge and discussing it, because I personally feel like as the Community College Committee, we are definitely about supporting our community colleges and in a way that is beneficial to the presidents and the institutions themselves. So I don't have a personal agenda about this item number. I just really want us to have a discussion about it. And Vice Chancellor McKinnon, on behalf of this item, had asked the presidents to look that over and be prepared for a little discussion about it. It is for information only. We won't be taking action on it today. But I just want to make sure that we're doing what's helpful and beneficial for what we do. That's supporting students and our faculty and staff. But I don't want us to have things on here that we're not doing, because I don't think we have time for that. So if I could actually start by hopefully not putting the presidents on the spot, but hearing from them about what you feel would be helpful to you. And I do things alphabetical order, but sometimes I do them in reverse because I know the last of the alphabet's always the last one to speak usually. So I'm going to actually start with President Solis. If you've had a time to review this charge and have some comments about it, I would appreciate that.
Good morning, Regent. Good morning, Regents and committee members. It's great to see everyone.
Region McAdoo, I have looked at this, at the charge. We've discussed this amongst the presidents. On my end, there's a couple of items that I think just food for thought on the charge. One, I think there's a couple of items that are a little bit repetitive that could be condensed, but that's just kind of more of the grammar and the writing. But in terms of the themes, Region, so much has changed in our world to when this was written to where we're at now. I think that there should definitely be some items around equity. I think there should be some items related to dual enrollment, especially with the conversations that we've been having about reskilling Nevada's workforce. I think the dual enrollment, and I think the other presidents would agree, is going to be an extremely important step for us to continue evolving in the state of Nevada. But along with everything that's happening, Region, even if there's a vaccine tomorrow, I think technology is here to stay in terms of how we do the business of higher education. And that's across all levels, more than just access, more than just the equipment, but different platforms, different kinds of resources for students, different tools for our faculty. And then, you know, the biggest piece is focusing on the reskilling for the next several years. As Nate mentioned, the state of Nevada has been the hardest hit ever in the history of the United States in terms of unemployment rate. So I think that we need to really be thinking about workforce reskilling, skilling up students, especially while we have them in high school, and incumbent workers. There's just a plethora of things there. So I think that just focusing on some of these really key changing topics would be helpful to the charge of the committee, Madam Chair.
Thank you for that. That poses just a question in my mind. Would you think that the Council of Presidents and the Vice Chancellor could work on how those things that you're bringing up, and I'm sure I'm going to hear others from other presidents, how we can incorporate that into the committee, whether it's with reports or just keeping all of us focused on the details. So as we go through the other presidents' comments, I would like for us all to keep that in mind about how we incorporate these things into our charge. Because usually I think we are allotted about 2 hours for a meeting. I don't know if that can be stretched to a little bit more, but I think that's the question I have. So thank you for that, President Solis.
Yes, ma'am.
And let's see. So I have to go to my backwards alphabet. And now we will go to President Hilgerson, please.
So good morning, Regents. So thank you for, first of all, putting this item on the agenda. I think it's really timely, and I'm encouraged by it because I do think, having attended these meetings now for a little over 4 years, I think that if we start with this statement, we can probably end up with a much stronger committee, one that's more action oriented. So that's the first thing I'll say is, you know, I think that the Community College Committee has been focused on hearing reports. And while that's beneficial, it certainly isn't enough, in my opinion. So the first thing I will say is that the more this document can be action oriented, I think the better it will be. I agree that the workforce emphasis is key. I think that I don't have much problem with the writing on that particular section as it's currently written. I think it's good. I also agree that dual enrollment should take a place in the forefront, including action related to developing a funding mechanism. This is where I believe this committee could be very important, and I would also encourage working very closely with some key legislators in advance, proactively, on helping seek appropriate funding solutions where both K-12 and the community colleges in the state of Nevada can actually sustain excellent levels of service around dual enrollment because we are appropriately funded to do so. Third, I think one of the things that I've noticed in the last 4 years is mission differentiation has if anything, it's not been clarified. It's gotten more mushy as time goes on, and this affects the cost of access. I think if the Community College Committee can get a handle on how do you provide equitable access in a way that from a policy perspective reduces the cost from the state, meaning 2-year colleges will be key, that would be an excellent analysis and an excellent set of recommendations, again working with the Nevada State Legislature proactively to see how that works. And finally, for me, one of the most important elements of this that is not in this document is the role of the IAC. Speaking for TMCC, I am so fortunate to have an outstanding IAC membership board. And they lead our college, they support our college, and they do it from a very local perspective. For TMCC, that means Reno and Sparks. And they've just been outstanding. And I think that the role of the IAC in partnership with the Regents should be clarified in this document, because I believe if we can work together in a much more detailed manner, that will also help our actions with the Nevada State Legislature. So thank you for asking, and I think that concludes my remarks.
Thank you for those. I have made note of those. I appreciate it. And we will ask President Hellens to join in on the discussion, please.
Good morning, Madam Chair and everyone. I approach this a little bit differently, maybe not surprisingly. It's always easy to criticize something that's already there in writing. So I just want to focus into the more bigger picture for my comments. So if you look to our American Association of Community Colleges, which is our national organization, they talk about their mission as building a nation of learners by advancing America's community college. So I was thinking really it would be very fitting this committee would be building a state of learners by advancing Nevada's community colleges. And if that were so, then the committee would provide a voice and advocacy for the community college mission. But what is the mission of the community college within our system? We have separate missions, but I couldn't find anything that said, what is this mission of community colleges within Nevada? And then I would think that the committee would support a shared commitment to the community college mission when it's identified, and identify and support opportunities for our continued development and success, such as workforce development and the many other areas that community colleges work in. If I have to go back to this document, I would say it's confusing. It doesn't seem to be written in one voice. It gets very specific in some places, and I think a charge should not be specific because details change and issues change. I think Dr. Solis had mentioned, times change. So I would support really taking a look at first going back to that broader voice of what is the committee about Nevada's community colleges, and then work down from there. I think in 1 and 2 on the current charge, there are some, relevant issues there that can be pulled out. But when you get to 3, it gets very confusing about 5 things. And so I think that I always like simplicity and the bigger charge. And then I think we'll be able to all remember what we're about. That's it.
Thank you for that. I do want to clarify that on my own behalf, when I read the charge, it wasn't so much a criticism of this. I am suspecting that in 2015, when the legislature wanted this committee, that fit into what was happening then. But when I read through it and have participated in this committee for quite a while, I felt like there were things on there that we weren't doing, and I didn't even know if they were pertinent for us to be doing now. So I just so far really have appreciated these comments, and I think we're off to a good start for narrowing this down, but making it way more meaningful to what we're doing. And now, President Zaragoza, I'm excited to hear your comments as well. Thank you.
Madam Chair, committee members, thank you for this opportunity to comment on the community college charge. And again, as has already been voiced, we as presidents had an opportunity to discuss the overall document. And I think the general theme that we all felt that could probably be drafted so it'd be a little bit clearer. But I think that it does capture at least six of the themes that are still very prevalent. But I think we all felt, and I particularly feel, that the alignment gap is significant. We talked about K-12 alignment, and that's very important, not only in terms of dual enrollment, but in terms of career pathways. And so I think that's a gap in the document that's very important for us to be able to address. Also staying in the alignment kind of area, I think it's very important that, like other states, that we continue to work on articulation between the community colleges and universities, so that every credit that a student takes in a community college transfers to a university in their program of studies. And again, that's deep dive and that's important work, but I think it's work that's very relevant to today's environment. We keep talking about aligning to the workforce. Our environment is changing significantly, and in workforce, there is a major trend towards industry collaboration, but more importantly, industry certifications. And so the question becomes, you know, how are community colleges incorporating industry certifications into our curriculum so that we are, in fact, providing kind of those segues to jobs that are so important for our students, especially in today's environment. And the last point that I'll make, I think, is a point that Vince made very, very clearly, and that is that there is an equity dimension to everything that we do. And in these areas, it's particularly trenchant, and I think it's important that we keep that at the forefront of our work. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, President Zaragoza. And so at this time, I would like to open up any questions or comments from the committee members. And Vice Chancellor McKinnon, I see your hand raised. Thank you.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I just wanted to echo the comments of my colleagues and our presidents. I think that the charge, and I'm really glad that you brought this up, because we haven't, admittedly, it hasn't been front of mind as we've dealt with other things. We have been looking at the IAC charge separately, and I do think that President Hilgerson's comment about somehow looping the IAC feedback piece into the committee charge is a very good one. And overall, the specificity that this charge carries, I think, is a challenge for not only the committee, but for our office as well. Our office is a staff of two people, myself and the Assistant Vice Chancellor of Workforce Development. Anyone else who works for us is grant funded for a very specific project and that they're working on 100% of their time. And so, to be able to do these six assessments with any meaningful way would be incredibly hard with our current structure and everything else on our plate. And, I think as President Helen said, the beginning of number one and two seem to have some good information there. But once you get into the very specifics of number three is when it starts to get really into the weeds. And I really appreciate the comments that our president's made on ways that we can look at this. And as you requested, following the discussion on this, I will work with the presidents to make suggested changes to this for a future meeting. Thank you.
Yes, that I think will be really helpful if this can be condensed into a document that the committee can have before them to review. I'm not saying this is going to happen at the next meeting, but we're going to work on this together to develop that. Regent Levine, did you have a question?
Thank you, Chair. President Hilgerson mentioned the analysis on funding just for the state to review how community colleges can actually save the state quite a bit of resources potentially. Vice Chancellor, how do we go about doing that? Who does it? Because I think that's a very good suggestion.
Madam Chair, if I may?
Yes.
Thank you, Nate McKinnon, for the record. Thank you, Regent Levine. I think that it is a very important question. I think we'd have to certainly include CFO Klinger and his team as part of that discussion and analysis. And I would be happy to have a conversation with him, with Chancellor Riley and Chancellor-Select Rose as she transitions into the role on September 1st, about ways that we can explore that moving forward.
Thank you.
Yeah, Vice Chancellor, if we do that, we're going to want it before January. So we would want that to be a fast, actionable item. So, okay, thank you.
Noted. Noted. Thank you.
Thank you. And I have a text that IAC Chair Randy Robison has a question or a comment for us. Please.
Pardon me, Madam Chair. This is Randy Robison. I didn't realize I had a question or a comment. Maybe that.
All right. I'm so sorry.
I think, Madam Chair, I think it was Rob Hooper had raised his hand.
Oh, all right. Well, okay, then. I can't see any of this on my phone, but Mr. Hooper, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks, Vice Chancellor, for getting me onto this call that way. Thank you. I just want to thank you, Madam Chair, for talking about the charge of the committee. I think it's really a good, timely conversation to have, as Vice Chancellor pointed out, with all the changes we're going through right now. It was interesting in hearing the president's comments on this, and I heard the IAC come up several times and from different directions on this. So what I'd like to add is I think it'd be a very good idea if there was in all four IACs a review of the charge and let the community members there recommend back to the committee how they see the charge, just to give you some input. I think that'd be a really good function of the IC. It fits in well with what they're already set up to do. And I think it'd be appreciative, I think, from the president's point of view, at least that's my guess, to hear that kind of input. So if that's the case, I'd be happy to work with this committee to standardize that so that we have comparable data from the IACs. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, and thank you, Mr. Hooper. I think probably the best way to get the IAC comments is for you, each of the IAC chairs and committees, to work with the institution president where they serve, and then the IAC chair or the president, you know, can bring that through Vice Chancellor McKinnon and at the meeting. Would that work?
Thank you. For the record, Rob Hooper, I think that would work great. Appreciate that advice. Thank you. We'll do that.
Thank you. Vice Chancellor McKinnon, do you have any comments on maybe a better way that would work, or do you think that's workable?
Nate McKinnon, for the record. Thank you, Madam Chair. No, I think that's a fine mechanism, but I do want to just point out that that won't allow us to bring it back at the October meeting. But I think that feedback is probably so important that we could push it off one more meeting, if that's okay with you, to allow the IACs to have their next meeting, provide that feedback to their presidents, and then we can bring it back to the committee.
I do believe, though, that there these other pieces we can be working on until the IACs meet.
Absolutely.
And that's my preference. And Regent Perkins, I believe you have a question.
Just not necessarily a question, just a comment. I kind of agree with the previous comments about it was the document is like a little bit too specific to be general, if that makes sense. The first two, the numbers 1 and 2 were very general and could be applied and sort of they're fluid. Whereas the later on in the document, that it gets too much in the weeds. So I would agree with those comments. And the reskilling and the equity and the voice advocacy that were mentioned by Dr. Solis and Dr. Hilgerson it's kind of stood out to me. And that should be part, I think that should be part of our you know, focus and charge also.
Thank you. And Regent Carvalho.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree with all of the comments that have been made, especially around equity. And what comes to mind is the cross-institutional collaboration that's been done regarding equity. I think that there's a lot of strength in our system and with the four community colleges working together, I think that that should be a part of the charge as well, that at a system level, the approach of all four working together to make obviously education better for all of Nevada. That way we can not duplicate certain things just working together as a system, I think should be a part of the charge as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Have I missed anyone that had a comment or a question? I'm not aware of it if I have. Okay.
John Tierney for the record. Just a quick one.
Hi, Mr. Tierney.
I just want to make sure. How are you doing? I want to make sure I'm looking at the right page. Okay. And we're looking at Part G, Community College Committee, shall, page 13, and then it goes on from there.
Let's see, anybody that can help me answer that question, because I just have printed out, it says Community College Committee hyphen charge, Title 1, Article 6, Section 3G.
Where I'm looking.
Okay, it starts out, the Community College Committee shall advise the board on community college issues, make recommendations. Okay, is that it?
Yep.
Thank you for asking. It's really important to me that we all participate in this, and I feel like we've seen shared governance at its best with this discussion, and that will continue, so I'm excited about that. Did you have another comment, Mr. Tierney?
Nope, I just wanted to be able to look at this on my own, so thank you.
Yes, thank you very much. Okay. If there are no other comments, we will move to agenda item number 7, the registered apprenticeship programs in Nevada. And I would like to invite certainly Vice Chancellor McKinnon to introduce our NSHE apprenticeship navigator, who will be doing the presentation. Welcome, Cheryl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Nate McKinnon for the record. And I'm pleased to bring to you today Ms. Cheryl Olson. Cheryl is the NSHE Apprenticeship Navigator, and she comes to us in that role with a tremendous amount of experience. Her position is a grant-funded position that works in partnership with the Governor's Office of Workforce Innovation, and more recently as from a federal U.S. Department of Labor grant, which she will talk about today. Cheryl comes to us and has been in Nevada for quite some time. She spent a number of years at Truckee Meadows Community College growing and building their apprenticeship program. And I'm sure President Hilgerson could speak just about the incredible value she added during her time at TMCC. Cheryl then went to become the executive director of the National Apprenticeship Project in Washington, D.C. for the American Association of Community Colleges, from a large federal grant that was put in place to expand apprenticeships nationwide across community colleges led by AACC. She headed up that program, and we are fortunate to have her now here at NSHE working on our apprenticeships to grow them from a system level across all of the community colleges here in Nevada. So we thought that today would be a good opportunity, since we have some new regents on the committee, and since we haven't done this in my time here, to review apprenticeships and what registered apprenticeship is, or as we call it in the business, RA, and understanding what that means to be a registered apprenticeship, understanding the components that go into apprenticeship, understanding why apprenticeship is so important. I think a lot of people, when they hear the word apprenticeship, think back to anything from Paul Revere as a silversmith to a construction or trade union, but actually apprenticeships have grown to be a lot more than that. Those models still exist and are very much part of what apprenticeship is today. However, we've learned about the value of that type of work experience in the education setting. So with that, and without any further ado, I'd like to introduce Ms. Cheryl Olson to talk to us about registered apprenticeships today in Nevada. Cheryl?
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Vice Chancellor McKinnon and Madam Chair and committee members. I'm very excited to be with you today to talk to you about registered apprenticeship. The slideshow, please.
Yeah.
We have the slideshow.
I think we do, Cheryl, if we just give the board folks, there we go.
Perfect, thank you. This virtual presentation is a little fumbling, so I apologize. So as I mentioned, we're here to talk about registered apprenticeship in Nevada, and thank you for the great overview of that, Vice Chancellor. Next slide, please. Okay, so registered apprenticeship, it's a traditional learn and earn model. As Vice Chancellor mentioned, it's very industry driven. Apprenticeship is it's a model that's very driven by industry and creates quality career pathways for our students with no student debt. So it's a very great opportunity for students to earn a credential, get industry experience, and earn a family-sustaining living wage. These programs are validated by the U.S. Department of Labor. There's very strict regulations as to what they must include. But first and foremost, it's a paid job. So an apprenticeship, it's a paid opportunity. An apprentice gets hands-on experience. They get the education that is strictly, that is specifically related to that job. And then they earn an industry credential that is transferable. Next slide, please. So there's lots of benefits of apprenticeship, as you're probably well aware. One of the great things, especially in this particular climate, is it brings, it offers the opportunity to bring in diverse talent for different occupations. Traditionally, people go to school and then they go into their career. And so they have that mindset of where they want to go from a very early age, but sometimes that isn't possible. So it creates an opportunity for people to go into a field that they may not think that they have the ability to do or the opportunity, and the employers see a great amount of diversity that is increased because of apprenticeship. It increases an employer's return on investment because of the model that brings in talent at a lower wage because they don't necessarily have all of the skills, but they build up to that. And it reduces turnover for the employers. So amazingly, there's 94% of apprentices that continue their employment after they complete their apprenticeship. That is, previous to COVID, that was a very good selling point for apprenticeship, that reduced turnover. As I mentioned, there's also the national credential that is received at the end of it. But training is really the biggest part of the benefits of apprenticeship. So there's lots of flexible training options that are part of the apprenticeship, but it's very specific to the actual occupation, which the employers really value. Next slide, please. So there's five core components of registered apprenticeship. First and foremost, there's employer involvement. It's very industry driven. The employer has a job that they can't necessarily find the skilled talent for, so they decide that they're going to build their own. And to do that, there's the structured on-the-job learning. So for each year of an apprenticeship, there's at least 2,000 hours of on-the-job learning. In addition to that, there's related instruction. So the related instruction is usually the community college coursework, or it's coursework that is provided specifically by the employer. And there's at least 144 hours of instruction per each year of apprenticeship. As the apprentice goes through the on-the-job learning and the instruction, and they increase their competency, they get rewarded monetarily for their skill gains. And at the end of their apprenticeship, they earn a national occupational credential, and that is basically their journey worker's card. So those are the five core components of registered apprenticeship. Next slide, please. So there's lots of different ways to structure an apprenticeship program. Traditionally, they've been time-based, so very specific. If you're going to do a four-year apprenticeship specifically, then that would be 8,000 hours of on-the-job learning, and then at least 144 hours per year of the technical training. But there's also competency-based programs, which they have an idea of how long the program will be, but really the length of it is determined by the ability to demonstrate competency in the specific task. So at the end of the program, the employer will have some sort of competency assessment to make sure that the apprentice is knowledgeable and skilled in all of the areas necessary. And once that is complete, then they complete their apprenticeship. There's also hybrid models which combine the two. So there's a minimum length that it needs to be, but there's also, they have to test out as far as competency to demonstrate that they're competent in that program. So as you'll notice on their programs range from 1 to 6 years in length. The most of the programs in the non-traditional areas are 1 to 2 years, and they're built to be stackable. So we like to have a career lattice that they can stack apprenticeships. IT is a perfect example of that. You might have one very specific type of IT occupation that you work towards. Once you complete that, the apprentice could go into another one. So it's there's lots of flexibility with that. Next slide, please. So how is apprenticeship different from other types of work-based learning? So first and foremost, apprentices are always employed. They're always receiving a paycheck for their work. So that's very different than maybe an internship or any sort of, job shadowing, that type of thing. Additionally, that there's guaranteed wage increases as the apprentice demonstrates their skills or progresses through the program. So as I mentioned, apprenticeships last from 1 to 6 years, depending on the occupation and the model, and they connect education and work simultaneously. So that's a very key component to that. The education and the work are so interrelated. It's very specific. The training that they receive is very specific to the work that they're doing. So they can learn the theory in the classroom and then practice and demonstrate it on the job. So it really builds a very strong connection between the training that they're receiving at the community colleges. And then it really helps them to become a much better employee in the long term. And as I mentioned again, the apprentices receive an industry recognized credential at the end. And traditionally, that was the goal, but we're really working for apprentices to also receive academic credentials as well. So a lot of the apprenticeship programs in Nevada also are aligned with our certificate of achievements and associate degrees. So next slide, please. So this really just demonstrates or visualizes the differences and similarities between apprenticeships and internships. So as you'll see, the internships, the purpose is really just experience general job training, not necessarily short term, but oftentimes it is just maybe a semester or a summer, that type of thing. And they're not always paid internships. So that makes it very difficult for a lot of people to or a lot of students to access internships because they need to have a paid job. So apprenticeships, on the other hand, they're paid opportunities. They're at least 1 year in length, many times longer, and they're very specific as to what the industry demand is at the moment. So it's very valuable not only for the apprentice, but it's very valuable for Nevada overall, because it really is training our students to do exactly what industry needs are right now. So next slide, please. So Nevada institutions have a very long history with registered apprenticeship, specifically with the union apprenticeship programs. So College of Southern Nevada, Truckee Meadows Community College, Western Nevada College, they all currently work with different union programs to offer the related technical instruction. As you'll see on this slide, there's over 65 different academic credentials that are awarded specifically for registered apprenticeship programs. That's in addition to the general academic credentials that may be aligned with some of the registered apprenticeship programs that are offered in Nevada as well. So to demonstrate the impact of registered apprenticeship for our institutions. In fall 2019, there are over 4,200 union-sponsored apprenticeships enrolled in our community colleges. Next slide, please. So some examples of union apprenticeship programs in the skilled trades: bricklayers, carpenters, electricians, stationary engineers, iron workers, the list goes on and on. But just so that's kind of the traditional mindset of when people think of registered apprenticeship programs. That's historically what people have thought of. So next slide, please. There's been lots of expansion in Nevada to actually expand those opportunities for registered apprenticeships. So in 2015, as Nate mentioned, Truckee Meadows Community College they received a Department of Labor American Apprenticeship Initiative grant, and the focus of that was really to expand registered apprenticeship opportunities in non-traditional areas. So advanced manufacturing, healthcare, some IT, business operations, the list goes on and on. There's lots of different opportunities, but there's been a lot of growth since 2015 for these non-traditional occupations. In addition to the non-traditional occupations, they're also opting for competency-based programs and stackable apprenticeships. So very different from previous apprenticeship programs where they were time-based and it was just you do that one apprenticeship and that's your career path. It's lots of flexibility for the companies and for students interested in a learn and earn model. And in addition to all of that kind of great change, colleges are now serving as apprenticeship program sponsors, which really helps strengthen the partnership between the colleges and employers. And apprenticeship really helps the colleges better understand what employers need for their training. So there's lots of wonderful benefits of the expansion of registered apprenticeship in Nevada. So if we can quickly go to the video. This is just a brief video that was actually part of Truckee Meadows, Nevada's Apprenticeship Project, which is their American Apprenticeship Initiative grant project. I wanted to show this for you. And unfortunately, we don't have the sound.
Certification and the educational requirements to do the job, but I'll also have a few years of experience.
Maybe we can references. Just skip the video
since we don't. Opportunity opens my eyes.
Is it possible that whoever's playing video
out on the shop that we've been in the trade for many years, that there's a lot of opportunities out there to succeed?
I don't know the answer to that. Whoever's playing the video, is it possible to get the sound? And would that be SCS or? So.
Okay. If we can't keep it.
That's okay.
I'm sorry.
I apologize. I still actually have a little bit left of the presentation.
Okay. And I do have a question from someone. I don't know if you would like to wait until the end of your presentation or if you want to take questions during. Can you please let me know your preference?
Madam Chair, I'm happy to take questions now, and then we can kind of go to the end afterwards.
Okay, that sounds perfect. Oh, I got text messages from friends that they could hear the sound on the video, but I couldn't hear it.
Oh, okay.
Regent, I believe you had a question.
I'll wait until the end of her presentation. Thank you, though.
Okay, thank you. All right, Ms. Olson, we'll continue. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. The next slide, please. So really, this is exciting news that we have further opportunity to expand apprenticeship opportunities in Nevada. Recently, Nevada System of Higher Education was awarded a $2.5 million grant from the U.S. Department of Labor for the Nevada Alliance for Youth Apprenticeship. This project was actually awarded just last month. We were one of 14 awards in the nation, so it was a very competitive grant opportunity. And the purpose of this grant is to expand registered apprenticeship opportunities for youth. So students ages 16 to 24. So lots of variation in that. So we can potentially work with students that are in high school as well as throughout their college career. It's a statewide initiative with the goal to serve 400 new registered apprenticeships within the four-year program. Our industry served are advanced manufacturing, healthcare, IT, construction, and mining. So quite an exhaustive list as far as the major industries of Nevada. And all of our community colleges are partnering in on this project. So we're very excited to launch this project, and we hope that this will even strengthen the pipeline of registered apprenticeship and build on the great work that's already been done by all of the community colleges. So with that, I will take any questions that that you have.
Madam Chair, may I just make a comment before questions?
Yes.
Thank you. Nate McKinnon for the record. I just want to just thank Cheryl. First of all, her tremendous work has led to that fantastic $2.5 million grant that we were able to receive to help us grow apprenticeships here. But as you can see, this is really exciting stuff. When I first learned about the robust offerings of apprenticeships and understanding the high quality aspects of registered apprenticeship programs, it helped tremendously in terms of differentiating between just a basic internship and really understanding what goes into an RAP and why it's so important. We've learned a lot really from the trade unions and their high quality programs. I had the privilege of touring both Northern and Southern Nevada union shops and their apprenticeship programs. And the emphasis on quality is really what's being replicated into other registered apprenticeship programs in non-traditional fields. So I just want to thank Cheryl for her great work on this. And with that, we'll turn it to you, Madam Chair, for the questions.
Thank you so much. Regent Levine, you had a question, please. Thank you.
Thank you. Vice Chancellor, this is fabulous. I can't thank you enough. 4,200 sponsored union apprenticeship programs is incredible. And if there was ever a time where we needed it in Nevada most, it's right now. So Cheryl, good job. One of the things I wanted to ask you about is when you mentioned the unions that we're partnering with, that's great. I just spoke to a couple of them actually earlier this week, and they were sharing with me some of the unemployment of their brothers and sisters, and they've been incredibly hard hit, some even more than others. And that's why I wanted to ask, has there been an open dialogue perhaps with culinary unions, since food and beverage and hospitality workers right now are one of the hardest hit, if not the hardest hit? Just in terms of, I wrote some of it down, you know, food and beverage management. I remember when I was on TSN's campus and I got a tour and they were showing, you know, if you wanted to have a specific trade within food and beverage, just anything like that, that we could partner with them on to help, I think is a really good idea. And I just wanted to hear your thoughts about maybe where that conversation has been started or what we can do to initiate it. Thank you.
Thank you for that question. As I am very open and excited to work with any of the union programs to help support their programs in any way we can. I definitely understand that this is a very challenging time for the union programs as well as many employers across the state. So any way that we can use apprenticeship to help support them and build their workforce, I'm happy to do that in support with this grant.
Thank you. We have a question from Regent Carvalho, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Olson, I'm not very familiar with this program necessarily, so I have some basic questions. One, you mentioned that there's no student debt, so I'd like to hear, is this employer-funded, union-funded, and also, these are called registered apprenticeships, so where are they registered? And I know those probably are maybe very basic level questions, but like I said, I'm not that familiar with them, so I appreciate your understanding with my basic understanding of this. Thank you.
Thank you for the question. Cheryl Olson for the record. So in specifics to student debt, in Nevada, there's actually NRS regulations that require the apprentices not to incur any sort of expenses as part of their apprenticeship program in regards to their related technical instruction. So they are exclusively employer funded, or sometimes there's grant funding to cover the cost of of the tuition or other sources, but the actual apprentice never has to pay for their courses that are related to their apprenticeship. So it is a wonderful model for students to earn a credential, earn a skill, and not take on any debt. So if that answers your question in regards to that, it's actually very different in other states. Some states, they do pass that debt along to the apprentice. They have to pay for any sort of instruction. So in Nevada, it's very unique to that. In regards to the registration, the programs are registered with the State Apprenticeship Agency, which is acting on behalf of the U.S. Department of Labor. And in Nevada, the State Apprenticeship Agency is operated under the Office of Workforce Innovation. So an apprentice, once they complete a program, they receive a certificate of completion or their journey workers card from the Governor's Office of Workforce Innovation on behalf of the State Apprenticeship Council. But they can also get a certificate from the U.S. Department of Labor Office of Apprenticeship.
Thank you for that. We have one more question, and that's from Regent Levine. And then if we're okay with that, I'm going to move us on to the next agenda item just due to the time frame. And if we need to bring this back to another community college meeting because we have want more information, we can do that. All right, Regent Levine.
Oh, thank you, Chair. Vice Chancellor McKinnon and Cheryl Olson, I'm not sure who this would go to, but I just want to make sure on the record, too, that when we are doing these apprenticeship programs, we are working side by side with the union leadership, right? Just to make sure that one, we're not in a position where they might feel that we're competing with them, but that we're working aligned with them, because I think that's really critical for a number of reasons. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Thank you, Regent Levine. Nate McKinnon for the record. So the answer is yes. That's part of the reason I took the time to actually tour all of our union shops in the North and the South with the appropriate representatives to understand their particular programs. I think where the difference is here, Regent Levine, is these non-traditional, meaning non-trade union apprenticeship pathways, don't actually have unions directly aligned with them. For advanced manufacturing, for IT, and et cetera. So we've been, I think, the truth of the matter is we've learned from the good work that the union trades have done. We're not, with this grant or in any of our other work, really exploring trade union apprenticeships that would be done in a non-union fashion, which would be directly competing. So we're not looking at doing a pipe fitter's apprenticeship with a non-union non-union company or anything along those lines. Now, that doesn't mean a non-union plumbing company couldn't decide they want to do one on their own and ask for it to be a registered apprenticeship, but that's not the work we're doing directly with this particular grant. We're looking at non-traditional fields because basically we've learned that the apprenticeships are a win-win-win. The student wins, the employer wins, and actually our institutions win too, because oftentimes those credits the student earn, even though they get an industry recognized credential, they're now well on their way to a certificate or an associate's degree. And they often come back and complete that or do so as part of their work towards becoming a journeyman. So I hope that answers the question. Cheryl, I don't know if there's anything you want to add on that.
No, I think that you covered that quite well, but I guess the one thing I could add is that we are working in partnership with some of the unions to actually build pre-apprenticeship programs for pipeline opportunities. So we definitely we want to collaborate and partner as much as we can, so.
All right, thank you. And my apologies, we did have a question from a committee member that I missed the raised hand. Regent Perkins, did you still have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll try to be quick. The statewide initiative with the goal to serve 400 new registered apprentices over 4 years, is there an equity component in that?
Cheryl Olson, for the record, we did identify different populations that we were hoping to target. So out of school youth was the main population, but we don't have specific requirements. We're just trying to make sure that we help with diversity efforts with the existing trades that we're working with.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I would like to just mention in regard to the video that we were not able to hear, if it's at all possible for Cheryl or Vice Chancellor McKinnon or President Hogerson to email that video to all of the regents. We could watch it and hopefully hear it at the time. I am going to move us on to the next agenda item just because of time. I do want to thank you, though, for your presentation, Cheryl. You can see it drew a lot of interest. And I think with workforce, it's really important for us to know about this. And I will certainly entertain the opportunity to get more information on that at another meeting or allow more time next time. Thank you so much. All right, so we will move to agenda item number 8, which is community college campus initiatives. And I'm just going to give a gentle reminder that each president will have up to 5 minutes. So I will first call on President Zaragoza with College of Southern Nevada, please. And then we will go to GBC, President Helens, TMCC, President Hogerson, and WNC, President Solis. Thank you so much.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Regents, Vice Chancellors, colleagues, guests. For the record, I'm Federico Zaragoza, President of the College of Southern Nevada, and thank you for this opportunity to present highlights and updates of CSN activities since my last update to the committee. I want to take this opportunity to thank Regent Del Carlo and Chancellor Riley for their participation in the CSN Fall 2020 Virtual Convocation Ceremony. In spite of the virtual format, the event received very high ratings and was extremely well received by the CSN community. Our fall 2020 return to campus transition is well underway to be able to deliver online, hybrid, and traditional face-to-face courses. While our schedule was originally set to accommodate 60% face-to-face instruction, our actual enrollment has migrated to approximately 90% online. The remaining 10% of our courses are courses that have intensive lab requirements, including our CTE and health programs such as nursing, that cannot be delivered totally on a remote basis. The COVID-19 environment is also contributing to some enrollment anomalies. In the past 10 days, which includes a non-purge payment period, we have seen our enrollment go from a 10% increase to a 12% decrease when compared to last fall. While we do expect our enrollments to increase as we continue to work with students on payment plans and as we continue to accelerate onboarding for students on waiting lists, it is also important to note that we are very intentionally creating a fall 2020 late term. I am pleased to announce that we have been working on our first responder education and training plan since day one of the epidemic. As a result, CSN is now positioned to deploy over 30 accelerated short-term training programs in areas of occupational demand throughout the region. These programs are blocked into 25 to 30 hours of weekly instruction to allow students to complete their programs of studies in 6 to 9 months and to quickly connect to employment opportunities. These are the efforts that directly respond to Governor Sisolak's call for community colleges to be the first responders for the thousands of Nevadans displaced and long-term unemployed. In other campus news, CSN received a $2 million workforce innovation grant from the Nevada Governor's Office of Economic Development for an advanced manufacturing rapid response program. These funds will allow CSN to create a new advanced manufacturing career pathway in machining, CNC, robotics, and production technician that are aligned to the Haas and other local manufacturing. I'm also pleased to report that Complete College America selected CSN student Krista McFarland Kelly as one of the country's 20 outstanding community college graduates as part of the 20 for 220 campaign. Krista was also selected as our 2020 commencement speaker and graduated this spring with an associate's degree in biology. She plans on transferring to the University of Nevada-Reno this fall. By the way, Krista is a sister of our current CSN student body, President Carly McFarland Kelly. So talent runs very deep in the McFarland Kelly family. I briefly want to highlight a few of our other activities. This summer, our medical lab students assembled more than 15,000 testing kits that were donated to the Southern Nevada Public Health COVID-19 laboratory as part of our community service efforts. In addition, CSN was featured by the Inter-America Organization for Higher Ed in a webinar on COVID-19, and the webinar detailed our conversion to online instruction, and we were identified as a best case, best practice case study. This session included 1,800 participants from throughout the Americas. I'm also pleased to report that as part of our CARES funding, CSN will be issuing all first-time in college, full-time students, brand new lab computers to assist them with their online and remote studies. And lastly, the CSN Foundation recently announced the establishment of a $2,500 George Floyd Memorial Generous Scholarship to be awarded annually to the winner of an essay competition on African-American culture or history. Madam Chair, that constitutes my report.
Thank you. Appreciate that. And now President Helens, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, when I think back to the last community college meeting and then campus initiative since, it's like the world has changed most definitely. So when we think about it, GBC was coming out of a record enrollment for the count year. We were able to return funding that was offered to us so generously from our foundation. And we had plans in place, and we were being very successful and sustainable. And then, of course, pandemic hits. So our first, I think, and foremost focus was that we keep people safe, that we keep students safe and our faculty and staff. Our migration to online was not that difficult because, as you know, we were already about 65% online. But the way everyone pitched in to help each other, to help even CTE and technical programs migrate as much online as possible was really heroic. We were the first college to then finish the CTE as soon as the governor gave us the go-ahead. We practice all our protocols. We, of course, had been working with UNR, our partner, and made sure that we were adopting much of what they were already doing. So successfully, we finished all of our students. When you think about how we were interrupted in March, particularly for nursing, and those programs were hands-on, is so very important. What's also amazing is that we continued to have 100% pass rate on the NCLEP, the national exam. To me, this really shows our faculty shining and that they are very dedicated. And then we also picked up the contact tracing for all of rural Nevada. And that was stretching our already stretched staff, but we all felt it was very important to be that active within our state and our community. So what we found is that in summer, we really pushed to make sure people understood the world may have changed, but your plans don't have to. And we ended up with over 25% increase in enrollment in summer for FTE. Even though, of course, not a count year, that really doesn't matter. What matters is people understood we're open. Our buildings may not have been open to the public, but we were open for business. This has now translated to fall enrollment, where at any given day we're between 5 and 10% up. But as you know, when we look at those figures, it just measures from a year ago. And a year ago, the world was very different. So when we look at a 5 or 6 or 10% increase in our FTE, also what I see is a staff that is very strained, because when you look over the last decade, we know that we've lost funding tremendously, but we've gained students tremendously. And I always say you can only be a sprinter and a long distance runner at the same time for only so long. So I'm really proud of the college and all of the staff, everyone, as I tell them every week, I meet every week with all the divisions via Zoom, that they are all very much essential. And we can see that in our success, and also continuing to focus on our students. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we are ready for President Hilgersum.
So, hi, everyone. So, first of all, I would like to echo that what Dr. Helens just said, and that is that the world has really changed. And I continue to be very proud and inspired by TMCC faculty and staff and administrative faculty who have really risen up to this occasion, even while managing their own personal and professional stressors along the way related to the COVID context. So since the last community college meeting, the emphasis continues to be twofold: COVID planning and decision making and keeping people safe, and also budget reduction planning and implementation. I reported on COVID planning at a meeting of the full board recently, so I will not repeat those details, but I will add that this past week and a half, faculty have returned from summer break, for those who had a summer break, and have been engaging in kickoff events and virtual workshops, all virtual, and we look forward to fall term 2020, which begins Monday when the students return. 70% of our courses are virtual, and the 30% that are not virtual are hybrids or their face-to-face CTE and allied health hands-on learning experiences. TMCC students are ready to learn. And at a kickoff event last week, a student panel, which we designed to hear from our students, clearly communicated their preference for synchronous online learning using tools such as Zoom, where students and faculty come together, just like we are today, in an online experience during a designated course time. They expressed that in spring, when faculty had to rush to move some things online and some things remote, that they really did have distinctive experiences, and their preferences were very clear. They prefer the synchronous online experience where folks come together, and the faculty heard this, and thankfully, faculty availed themselves of numerous online workshops and trainings over the summer, so I think they're ready to meet that new delivery mode for most of our courses. I look forward to seeing a few students on campus next week in a small number of course sections that will be offered face-to-face using masks, hand sanitizer, socially distanced classrooms, and frequent sanitizing procedures employed college-wide. And since our last meeting, the TMCC also responded to the state's call for budget reductions. We did so using a shared governance structure that has proven effective even during these bad financial times. We strive to avoid layoffs of our full-time employees, and we're striving to keep our loyal part-time faculty employed as well. And all of that is going very, very well for us considering this situation. Over the summer, we also completed a feasibility study for a capital campaign related to the Eastview project, and we believe that we can raise private funds as required, although there will be delays due to COVID. More importantly, the process study, which was conducted by outside consultants Netskill Grisby, the study helped the TMCC Foundation identify strengths and weaknesses of our fundraising endeavors in general. And this will really assist with building upon an already great foundation. And I really mean that. The TMCC Foundation, they are fantastic, but we can even be even better. And the study has helped us to hone in on the next steps of that. I'm very thankful to community member Collie Hutter, who chaired the study advisory team. I'm thankful to each individual community member. They were incredible. I'm compelled to add the dedication of one member in particular. Nancy Fennell, owner of Dixon Realty, went above and beyond and spent a lot of time helping us lining up interviews with community members to give us feedback during the study. Of course, I am grateful to leadership of our executive director and her team, Gretchen Sawyer, the best team I've ever worked with, hands down, when it comes to foundation and grants. Probably the most positive news we received is that we successfully competed for and received a TRIO grant from the Federal Department of Education. These grants are very competitive, especially since this is our first one and we hope to sustain it for the next two decades or more. The grant will provide deep service to 140 students per year, and these programs work. We will receive approximately $261,000 per year for 5 years, and we can continue to reapply when the first grant cycle sunsets. getting new money in the TRIO grant world is fantastic because these grants, again, are very competitive. And we're thrilled that we have additional resources to apply a case-by-case approach to each one of the 140 students per year that the grant will serve. At TMCC, we continue to develop new relationships with industry partners and strengthen existing ones. Our partnership with Tesla and Panasonic continues to progress, and we are constantly seeking additional industry partners. I love the idea that was presented earlier today about figuring out how to get culinary and hospitality into apprenticeships. I wish I would have thought of that, Regent Levine. That's a good one. I'm going to look, I'll be analyzing that. These COVID times may have slowed the work a bit with our industry partners because I think we're all a bit stressed out there in the industry world, but we will strive to build upon and create new and improved partnerships with private industry. And I'm thankful for all of those at NCHE who assist with that important endeavor. And that concludes my update today.
Thank you, President Hilgersum. And President Solis, you are up next, please.
Madam Chair, Vince Solis for the record. I want to echo some of the comments that were made by my colleagues. I want to publicly thank the entire Western team for the amazing transition that has taken place over the last 5.5 months as we deal with COVID. Special thanks to Dr. Robert Morin, who is our faculty Senate chair, and Jim Strange, who is the chair for the union chapter at Western, along with our admin classified and our adjunct groups. Also special recognition to our student leaders. It has been nothing short of amazing in terms of what the teams have done. They have been not only supportive and involved, but very engaged with the decision-making for the campus. So with that said, Regent McAdoo and members of the committee, we have reopened the campus to the public. We have launched our early start classes. We have 20 of those that are taking place right now. 3 are in person as our pilot program so that we can continue to monitor the COVID situation very closely. And then we anticipate moving into the fall semester with a similar model where we will have in-person courses and face-to-face instruction along with online instruction. So faculty have been given the flexibility to determine how they want to deliver those courses with our students. We do have many requests for face-to-face instruction, so we will be working very closely with our faculty group to monitor that situation as we teach face-to-face. We have developed, in order to process and help with that endeavor, a group of student ambassadors whose sole focus is to help mitigate any of the issues related to COVID. So they focus on social distance, wearing the mask, sanitizers, and all the things that come with that. As we move into the fall semester, our enrollments are down slightly. We're down about 3.5%. We anticipate that we will either be very close to flat or a little bit below. Our summer enrollments were up quite a bit, but our dual enrollment is up 24%. So lots of opportunities there for us as we grow that program. We were the only institution that was able to complete a graduation for our students. We had a drive-through graduation that was very successful. We had one in Fallon and one here at the Carson City campus. Speaking of Fallon, we also developed we continue to grow the partnership that we have with the Oasis Academy. They will now be housing their 9th and 10th graders at our Pinion building, which we're very excited about because they make up a substantial part of the enrollment in that area. Also in Fallon, we're going to be launching our HVAC program over the course of the fall semester to serve the Fallon area with classes beginning in the spring semester. We're also looking at exploring new markets, no pun intended here, but we are launching our ground school for pilot program. We believe that there will be a high demand for pilots, so we are launching those classes that are already full for the fall semester, and we're excited about that new endeavor. Our prison education program continues. One of the things that's exciting about that is we've just been notified that we have been able to take our wireless units in there so that the students can continue their education similar to every other student in an online setting. As you may know, Regents, that has been a challenge because the students there do not have access to the internet because of the structure. But now we are pleased to report that we are in those facilities with our mobile educational services. Also speaking of mobile, the mobile unit, which we are calling the Western Nevada College Tech Express, will be around our service area starting in October. We were going to have a launching of that initiative very soon, so we can unveil it to the campus, and that will be focused on advanced manufacturing via our mechatronics program. Our convocation is set for the 26th, which is next week. We invite all of our regions and all of our partners to join us. That's at 10 a.m. Zoom links are available for that item, and we're excited to start the fall semester. I also wanted to invite everyone to our annual golf tournament, which begins on September the 25th. It all is completely full right now, but we always have space for our NCHE and community college partners and our regents. So we're excited about that. And last but not least, Regent, I did want to talk a little bit about how successful we have been during the course of the year with our external funding. So as of yesterday, we were notified that we received the USDA grant in conjunction with our OSIT office. Special recognition to Brian Mitchell at OSIT for helping us with this. This is a grant in the amount of $464,000 that is going to be developed specifically for the development of Zoom rooms, Zoom technologies, online learning. So it's almost $500,000 of technology. We couldn't do it without our partners at OSIT and the Pennington Foundation, which gave us a $40,000 match, bringing that over to just over $500,000 for new technology. And Regents, I am pleased to announce that over the course of the year, our external funding amounts in the last 12 months are at $4.8 million in external funding over the last 12 months. So those are the updates from Western Nevada College Region.
Thank you for that report. I want to thank each of our presidents. I mean, I can really only say, wow, you have just continued to do phenomenal work in these days of COVID. I would like to move us to agenda item number 9 for the Institutional Advisory Council meeting reports. And we will start with you, Ms. BJ North, since I know that you've got some branches of your bank in a danger zone. I don't know if you're still with us, though.
I am, and thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, we've got a little hot going around our area. Several of our branches are on fire, and Reno is covered with smoke. But other than that, things are good. Thank you for this opportunity to share with you some of the highlights at our TMCC Fabulous College in Northern Nevada, and also for the opportunity to give you some input on the community college committee charter. I'm looking forward to working on that. I think there's some positive changes that can be included or comments to be considered that could make that a better working document that would also include the IAC presidents and groups for further communication and needs. It seems like forever. I mean, I'm looking at our list and there's several meetings on here that we have to report on, but just to give you a real quick highlight in being respectful of time, in February, if you can believe it, we're going back to February, but IAC, the entire committee, we held our board meeting in the very exciting, beautiful Joe IRB Gymnasium Sports and Fitness Center. And this really changed the complexion and the complexity and student experience for TMCC, and we're delighted and proud to have that in our community. And I know that the students are really enjoying it, and I commend the team up at the college for making that happen. We also have a very active student government, and the president of the Student Government Association shared her involvement with advancing the use of open educational resources and digital texts, so that the initiative there was to allow access from any location for educational resources 24/7, and she was very passionate about that and has worked hard. We reviewed TMCC's strategic initiatives and discussed priorities for TMCC and NCHE. And at the top of that list, as was discussed earlier today from many different comments, was dual enrollment. That is critical and can be very economically efficient. From an IAC perspective, we want to determine what initiatives that we can look at as a committee where we would have the most impact and be the most effective. So that's one of our initiatives as an IAC group. We learned the processes of current and possible future bachelor's degree programs at TMCC. We're not interested in duplicated programs, but we're also interested in providing programs needed for the benefit of our community and our students, and for you, and also fulfill workforce need. In that planning, we talked about RN to BSN program soon. And as a director, board member of our Economic Development of Western Nevada, and hearing from many hospitals, and I am on a hospital board, the number of students that are leaving the state and hospitals that are recruiting from out of state because we don't have enough resources here, this is what is a big topic and one of concern. And so I'm glad to see that we are considering that, and I hope we continue to move forward. We also discussed about TMCC IAC membership, and this is another initiative we believe and need to make sure that our council represents and mirrors the community that we serve. And we took a survey of our current membership and openings that we have, and feel that there's been so many changes in the diversification of the market here that we serve, there's been companies that are not represented properly and were not even here 5 years ago. So we are trying to diversify our board more and have it mirror the community that we serve to initiate and support the needs that will continue to make Northern Nevada thrive. On the 15th, we had a Zoom meeting, my favorite. We reported on what TMCC's response to COVID-19, and since we've never been here before from a higher ed and education perspective, as well as a business perspective, I commend the college and all of the system for the work that has been. This has been a trial by error by many of us, and being in banking with numerous branches, we continue to find challenges and opportunities to strengthen our skills. And I believe that TMCC has done a great job. We talked about budget reductions, efforts, planning on reopening, grants, funding opportunities, and things that relate to the COVID-19 relief efforts. The August 17th IAC meeting was canceled. I think there was a conflict with the Board of Regents meeting. And that concludes my report. Unless there are any questions, I'm happy to address them. And I appreciate your time.
Thank you for the report. I appreciate what all the IACs do. And I look forward to hearing from CSN IAC Chair Randy Robison now. Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair. This is Randy Robison, for the record, Chair of the IAC for College of Southern Nevada. Thank you so much for this meeting. I appreciate the discussion that's occurred, particularly on the charge. I think that'll be very helpful going forward as it gets more focused. Certainly will help guide the work of the IACs as well. Wonderful to hear all of the work that's going on, particularly in response to the pandemic, and for me in my world, particularly in response to the last couple of special sessions. I would just want to highlight the work of our own president Zaragoza. He and his staff have been phenomenal in responding to the challenges presented first by the pandemic, and then most recently by the budget reductions that got to be pretty steep. He reached out early and often, both internally and externally, to his stakeholders for advice and counsel, and then successfully navigated a pretty pretty tense budget scenario, particularly in the special session. You know, most of the time, in the sausage making process. You get time to kind of watch it happen, let it rest a little while, let it age a little bit, and then see what comes out at the end and digest it accordingly. This time around, it was sort of cut, chop, fry, and shove down your throat, chewing optional. And he managed it. He and his team managed it very, very well. We're fortunate to have him and his leadership. One thing that I would just briefly mention in terms of issues moving forward, there has been in recent weeks a lot of talk about equity, and in this meeting as well. And as it relates to funding community colleges and the needs of the students, part of that equity discussion is the idea of adequacy, and funding that is tied to what is actually required for a student to make it from point A to Z, meaning entrance and completion with a degree or certificate, whatever that gets them onto that next step, whether it's matriculation to the university or into the workforce. As our governor has recently or stated at the beginning of the pandemic, when he first mentioned budget cuts, community colleges are the ones who are going to lead us out of this in terms of reskilling, retraining, workforce, and whatever comes next. And I think some of the discussion that has been occurring nationally with respect to another round of stimulus funding, I think is instructive in terms of what we might consider here at the state level as it relates to funding on a per student or student-centered funding formula, as opposed to an FTE kind of formula. I know that can be sometimes a difficult and complex discussion, but as we look forward to whatever the future of community colleges of higher ed looks like, I think it's an issue that bears some close inspection as we prepare to, not only for this upcoming session, but into the future. So with that, Madam Chair, again, I appreciate the discussion that's occurred today. I thank you, each of you and the Regents, for their obvious engagement in the community college space. And that would conclude my remarks. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your input. I don't see any questions, so we will move to Mr. Rob Hooper. Yes, Ms. North.
I apologize. I just wanted to thank you so much, Chairman McAdoo. I do have to get off the call. I just wanted to say thank you and hope everyone has a wonderful weekend. Thank you for all your work.
Stay safe.
Thank you.
All right. Mr. Hooper, welcome. I think you're on mute. I think you're still on mute.
Madam Chair?
You can hear me there. Yes.
This is Vince at Western, for the record. Ma'am, Mr. Hooper did let me know earlier that he is having technical difficulties. He may have fallen off the call. He's trying to get back on there, but that was the last I heard, that he's having technical difficulties with the logging in.
Oh, okay. Well, we will go to Mr. Tierney with Great Basin College. If Mr. Hooper gets back on, we will go to him after Mr. Tierney. Thank you for letting me know.
Hey, thank you. I'm not sure what happened to the volume there, but it just went down on my earphones. Anyway, okay. Yeah, there it is. I was devastated when the whole COVID thing hit, because I had just chaired my first meeting. I got a steep learning curve. and all of a sudden, everybody is scrambling. But President Helens has done a great job. Had a great basin, staying in touch with student populations and helping as best we can with them. We continue to grow programs with Elko High School and construction. Let's see, we got a new
CRE program being implemented in West Wendover. The nursing cohort in Ely is successfully moving forward, and the online programs are doing a great job. Hello. Somebody's got an open mic. At any rate, I'm looking forward to getting back together. It's, to use the old phrase, getting the band back together and actually making some music, because everything has been kind of blown apart. And, you know, and Great Basin is doing a great job. And I'm getting up to speed. I'd also, after our meeting, have met with Nate down in Reno. And he got to meet my wife, who is now officially a citizen of the United States. Went through that whole thing. That was another, you know. In between, I've been working with the Superintendent's Teacher Advisory Cabinet. We've been having weekly meetings with what's going on with public education and the interface between public education and community colleges and our other universities. So I'm looking forward to moving forward and then getting things rolling.
Thank you, Mr. Tierney. Welcome to the IAC and the Community College Committee. We are glad you're with us. And
it's good to be here.
Thank you. I understand that Mr. Hooper is back able to join us, so we will move to him for his report, please. Thank you. I am not able to hear you, Mr. Hooper. My screen says.
Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
Rob, this is Nate. I think you have.
Now?
That might be better.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you now. Thank you.
Yeah. Excuse me for that, but I've had a lot of troubles with this BlueJeans, and I've been on the phone with the audio, and my phone got disconnected somehow. You ran, I could see and hear everybody, I just couldn't talk. So I apologize for that. Anyway, thank you, Madam Chair, for this opportunity to report on the WCIAC. WNC held its IAC meeting on July 29th. Accordance with open meeting law. The meeting was held via video and telephone in compliance with the governor's directives resulting from the COVID health crisis. The quorum was present. And we were very appreciative, Madam Chair, that you were able to join us, along with Regent Del Carlo and, of course, Vice Chancellor McKinnon in his tireless effort in supporting the IAC. We thank you for being there with us. The meeting was in many ways a refocusing of the IAC in light of the many new challenges from our current health crisis and, of course, the complexities of budget and everything else that comes out of that. It was a goal of this meeting to inform the IAC members of how WNC is progressing, how the impact of the budget cuts are being managed, provide realistic expectations for the community. President Solis provided meaningful remarks that assured the members of the IAC that WNC has a very well thought out and active plan for reopening of the campus. This plan was characterized as a balancing act with safety, which I thought was very clever. The members were delighted to hear the progress on crisis management, enrollment initiatives, and supporting scholarships. Dr. Solis presented several initiatives and system news that provided the members with key information to support their work of community advocacy. Of these, two of the initiatives were met with great enthusiasm. One was the mobile manufacturing lab that was mentioned by Dr. Solis in his report. This is a very important development in that it will support broader application of advanced skills education within the many rural and frontier areas served by Western Nevada College. It is hoped by the members that this type of delivery system can be expanded. Secondly, a great presentation was made on the proposed Fernley campus. This also was met with great enthusiasm. Members were introduced to this project and its benefits to Fernley and the entire region surrounding it. Ideas are now being discussed on how the community can best support this project. Now, both initiatives are considered critical. Within the Fernley-Silver Springs area, there are currently 9 new industrial park developments in design and different stages of development. The future businesses that will move to these parks will need an active community college system to support their decision of setting up and maintaining their operational HR needs. Both the mobile lab and the new Fernley campus are important to successfully serving this growth. The members were very encouraged to see that WNC is already in anticipation of these needs, laying the groundwork for educational solutions. At our next IAC meeting, we plan to give a presentation of the industrial development plans for the Fernley Silver Springs area, seek comments from members, and how to best answer these workforce development challenges. IAC members were given an inside view of the budget challenges and the steps being taken to manage and mitigate. This has been an active topic of concern within the community. All members strongly made their voices heard in the pursuing discussions with questions and comments. It was expressed that stipends are critical to success and we must find a way to bring them back. Also on how the cuts to our community college budgets are going to be made up and restored to the needed levels for a fully operational and growing institution. It's interesting to note this crisis has increased the need for services and at the same time decreased the resources that we have to serve those needs. Members are concerned and thankful at the same time, concerned that we may lose any of the great momentum that WNC has built up, and thankful we have such excellent leadership that is demonstrating the full ability to manage our way through this crisis. More critical information was provided by Cal Dalby regarding the great partnership he and his staff are forging, the dual credit programs, and more. I and the AC members found the information given and the obvious positive news to be exciting in these challenging times. These presentations truly fulfill one of the key purposes of the IAC as a community-driven institution. The WNC IAC was given a great rundown of system news by the Vice Chancellor and the changes that have gone on within the board. It was with great regret and sadness felt by the members with the news of the passing of Sam Lieberman. He will definitely be missed. The members were cheered back up with the announcement of the way the board was handling its vacancy, and even in a bigger way, that Dr. Solis has successfully completed his periodic evaluation and had earned a new 4-year contract. Speaking on behalf of the many community members throughout the service area of WNC, I'm happy to add that affirmation, the great respect and appreciation that is felt for Dr. Solis. The region believes wholeheartedly that we have the right leadership in Dr. Solis and the team he leads. At that point, the meeting was adjourned with no public comment. And thank you, Madam Chair. That is my report.
Thank you, Mr. Hooper. I appreciate the reports of the IAC chairs. I appreciate your time and effort that you give as champions to the community colleges for each of you. I'm very grateful. We've had several new business items brought up within the meeting. I've made note of those. Are there any other new business items on agenda item 10? If not, I would entertain public comment. Mr. Begali.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We just checked with board staff, and at this time, there is no additional public comment. Thank you.
Thank you for that. So as the meeting adjourns, I just want to thank each of you for your time today, but most especially really for your 24-hour, 7-day-a-week work that you do on behalf of higher education in Nevada. I personally am grateful. And I want to leave you with this ending comment, and my hand is raised because this quote comes from my 3-year-old granddaughter, and she raised her hand to almost my heart and said, "Grandmommy, I will be so glad when this virus is gone." So I leave you with that and agree with her wholeheartedly. Thank you again for your time today. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.